Roll call be dispensed with and the sergeant at arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. All those opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. The sergeant will be instructed to bring in the absent members. Today's chaplain is Reverend David Hennen from St. Francis Xavier Catholic Church in Buffalo. And following the prayer, please remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
We gather once again this morning and acknowledge God's presence with us. God of heaven and earth, we ask for your guidance today to give our senators the right to see your ways and not their own. Bless them with your grace, for they desire to do what is good and right for our state. May all their interactions, conversations, and debates be respectful, as we are all created in your image and likeness. In the midst of the many complex issues that your servants are dealing with, help them to see the gifts that you have given to each one of them, because it is through these gifts from which all solutions will come. There is no issue or problem too great, for we know that you are in control of all things. We just need to submit our gifts to your grace and wisdom and power. Please answer this prayer, for we make it in your all-powerful name, for we know that you are Lord forever and ever. Amen.
Secretary will take the roll.
Senators Bach, Benson, Berglund, Bonhoff, Brown, Carlson, Chamberlain, Cohen, Dames, Daly, DeKreif, Dibble, Fishbach, Gazelka, Gerlach, Gimsey, Goodwin, Hall, Han, Harrington, Higgins, Hoffman, Howe, Ingebrigtsen, Jungbauer, Kielash, Cook, Cruz, Kubley, Langseth, Latz, Lilly, Limmer, Laurie, Magnus, Marty, McGuire, Metzen, Michelle, Miller, Nelson, Newman, Nino, Olson, Ortman, Pappas, Perry, Peterson, Pogamiller, Reinert, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Saxog, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Sparks, Stump, Thompson, Tomasoni, Torres, Ray, Vandeveer, Wieger, Wolf.
A quorum is present. Moving to the third order of business. Messages from the House. There is one message to be read by the Secretary.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following House file herewith transmitted. House file number 1381, a bill for an act relating to education. Alban A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
There's no Senate action necessary on that message. Fourth order of business, the first reading of House bills. The following bill was read for the first time. House File 1381, a bill for an act relating to education, was referred to the Committee on Rules and Administration for comparison with Senate File Number 1167, now on general orders. First reading. Fifth order of business, reports of committee. There is one report to be read.
Senator Roebling from the Committee on Finance, to which was referred Senate File 1363, a bill for an act relating to state government. And when so amended, the bill do pass. Amendments adopted. Report adopted.
Madam President.
Senator Latz.
Under Rule 21, I object to Senate File 1357 and ask that it be referred to Rules. There are about $131,000 in fiscal year 12 in unfunded obligations for the Department of Human Services. I think Rules needs to look at it.
And Senator Latz, you said Senate File
1357.
Under Rule 21, 1357 will be referred to the Rules Committee. Senator Koch.
Madam President, I move that the committee reports printed in the agenda and the report read by the Secretary be adopted.
With the exception of Senate File 1357. On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, nay. The motion is adopted. Moving to the sixth order of business, the second reading of Senate bills. There are two printed in today's agenda. We will only give the second reading to Senate File 869, second reading. Oh, and 1363 that is not printed. Second reading. Moving to the seventh order of business, second reading of House bills. There are several printed on page 4 of today's agenda, second reading. Moving to the eighth order of business, introduction and first reading of Senate bills. There are several printed on today's Senate bill, introduction, first reading. Moving to the ninth order of business, motions and resolutions. There are four printed in today's agenda. They will be taken as one motion. All in favor, say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that the Senate do not concur in the amendments by the House.
Senator Limmer, you need to take that bill off the table first.
Oh, Madam Chair, I would like to take the Senate File 509 off the table.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that the Senate do not concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File 509. And that a conference committee of five members be appointed by the subcommittee on conference committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, I would move that Senate File 1057 be withdrawn from the Committee of Finance and re-referred to the Committee on Capital Investment. The bond proceeds bill, it's technical. We want to bring it over and include it in a hearing on tomorrow.
All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Rosen.
Madam President, I move that the foregoing recommendations on Conference Committee Report Senate File 626 be now adopted and that the bill be repassed as amended by the Conference Committee.
To that motion, Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam President. This is Senate File 626, House File 937. It's the nursing home bed moratorium modification. If you remember, members, it was it allowed the Commissioner of Health to approve the placement or removal from layaway status of nursing home beds under hardship. I had a nursing home in New Richland that was flooded out, and they were still required to pay that nursing home bed surcharge. This bill would allow under hardships such as that of natural disasters to be exempt from that daily surcharge. And it also mandates that the nursing home facilities pay the nursing home surcharge on an open and active beds was the old law. The new law would modify the exceptions to the nursing facility bed moratorium on certification of new beds by allowing the Commissioner of Health to approve the addition of new Medicare and Medicaid certified beds. And again, it would allow these nursing homes not to have to pay the nursing home surcharge if there was some undue hardship. It also allows the Commissioner of Health, in consultation with the Commissioner of Human Services, to publish information in which interested parties may demonstrate that a specified area is a hardship area, and that the commissioners shall review the data to determine if any of the areas are to be declared hardship areas. It also, in conference committee, we adopted that the commissioners are also required to request proposals specifying the number of new beds that may be added to the designated area. And it also addressed in this legislation the method used to determine budget-neutral nursing facility rates for relocated beds. So there was a formula is specified for calculating the payment rates for bed based on comparing the cost of the beds prior to and after relocation. So in the conference committee, we adopted a House provision that allows the Commission of Health to approve requests for the consolidation of nursing facilities. Along with the consolidation of the facilities, the commissioner will also be allowed to calculate a property rate adjustment for the consolidated facility. Also adopted an amendment that would allow existing funds available for moratorium projects to be used to fund an approved moratorium exemption project, which is in Bloomington. Madam President, with that, I will stand for any questions, and I ask for your support.
Discussion on Senate File 626, Senator Berglund.
Thank you, Madam President. Will Senator Rosen yield?
Senator Rosen will yield. Senator Berglund.
Madam President and Senator Rosen, I have a few questions about the section of the bill that was added by the House in regard to the Department of Health approving the upgrading of the physical plant of remaining nursing facilities when a closure takes place and approving a property rate adjustment for those facilities. We have a process now where a temporary rate increase can be granted for bed closures. But the money for that was entirely zeroed out in Senator Hand's omnibus budget bill. This process would require additional funding for rate increases for these nursing homes. And so my question is, where is the money coming from for the provision in this bill?
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam President. And Senator Berglund, we did not hear this in the Senate. So it is coming out of existing appropriations, and you are correct. We did not budget for this, so it would be coming out of existing appropriations.
Senator Berglund.
Madam President, Senator Rosen, that is my exact point. It would be coming out of appropriations that we don't have anything for. So, Madam President, my question again is, how could the Senate conferees agree to this?
Madam President and Senator Berglund, I believe there was no fiscal note on this at all, though. So if there are closures, it would have to come out of the existing appropriations, but there was no fiscal note on this portion of the bill.
Senator Berglund.
Madam President and Senator Rosen, it is impossible to give rate increases to nursing homes and not be spending money. And if you're spending money, it does increase state spending. I mean, the only way you could give a rate increase to a nursing home without spending more money is taking some away from another nursing home, which this conference committee report does not authorize that.
Senator Rosen.
Madam President and Senator Berglund, this is if nursing homes are going to consolidate, there would be a rate adjustment. Not necessarily a rate increase, but a rate adjustment.
Well,
Senator Berglund.
My understanding of the language is it allows upgrading of the existing facilities, which would require the spending of money to upgrade those facilities. When you spend money, usually you expect to get that money back over time in a rate increase. And the bill says that if the upgrading of the facilities is approved, a property rate adjustment will be calculated. And the amendments to the conference committee report don't say that that rate increase would just be for the period of time that property improvement would be pending and would need to be paid off. It's a permanent rate increase. So, again, Madam President, Senator Rosen, with all due respect, I do believe that this provision is spending money, and it is money that is not in the budget.
Madam President.
Senator Rosen.
And Senator Berglund, I appreciate that. I understand where you could assume that, but this is in the case of a consolidation of nursing facilities. So it is hard to probably give a fiscal note, not knowing if there is going to be consolidations happening and what's coming down the pipeline. But that is, it gives guidelines on what's going to happen and the adjustment for these consolidations going forward.
Senator Berglund.
Oh, Madam President. Senator Rosen, I'd like to suggest that either the Department of Health will never approve this, or we will be allowing them to spend money that we haven't appropriated. So I think that this is not was not a wise provision to add to the Senate bill. As you know, I was enthusiastically supporting the original Senate bill. I certainly have a lot of questions about this provision being added to this bill.
Madam President?
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Senator Berglund. Somebody just jogged my memory in the conference committee report. The department, Mr. Held, did testify that the funds would come out of a carryover fund that is set up from this past year, and that there is, again, no fiscal note. But if it is something that we need to address, I don't know how you address it if there's no fiscal note, but Senator Hand said we could address it in the budget bill going forward. But this was testified in the conference committee that this provision is fine. If there is any funds that need to be appropriated, they'll come out of a fund that they have acquired from this past year.
Senator Berglund.
Madam President, again, I just like to suggest that if we're going to pass this today, whatever needs to happen to the budget to allow this should be in this bill, not in some other bill, because it's possible that one of these bills will get passed and signed and the other one may not get passed or may not get signed. So I find this very troublesome.
Further discussion, Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam President. And I appreciate that, Senator Berglund. However, I think we're presuming that there is going to be consolidations of nursing facilities going forward. This is just language to address that. If there is consolidations going forward, the dollars will be appropriated out of the fund that the department has. They testified that in conference committee. So again, I think this is a good conference committee report, and I ask for your support. I believe we need to deal with these hardship cases for facilities, and hopefully we don't have any. It also deals with relocation, too, that allows for the nursing facility to be built in another place instead of the existing site, which I think is also important, especially when you're dealing with these flood situations. But members, this is a good report, and I ask for your support.
Further discussion on Senate File 626. Senator Rosen renews her motion that the foregoing recommendations and conference committee report on Senate File 626 be now adopted and the bill be repassed as amended by the conference committee. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Secretary will give Senate File 626 its third reading.
Conference committee report on Senate File 626, a bill for an act relating to human services, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 626. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 51 ayes and 13 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Remaining under motions and resolutions, Senator Koch.
Madam President, pursuant to Rule 26, I designate the following bills be made a special order for immediate consideration. On your general orders, number 2, House File 8, number 32, Senate File 930, and number 124, Senate File 1115.
Moving to those special orders, we'll start with House File number 8, Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam President. My understanding is that House File 8 is the language of Senate File 32.
Yes, that's correct, Senator Hahn.
And member, Senate File 32, or House File 8, is a provision that deals with what we're calling the Healthy Minnesota Plan. And what this represents, members, is a reform to one of the programs that we use in Minnesota to provide health insurance to low-income Minnesotans. This is a opportunity, I think it's a historic opportunity for the people of the state of Minnesota to implement a new direction in how we are going to go forward in providing health care for our lower income citizens. There are great questions about the current structure that we have and how fiscally sustainable that is. So what we're offering is a plan that we believe is fiscally sustainable and we think provides better coverage. I do want to just very briefly talk about some of the provisions of the bill. The heart of the policy, if you will, is found in Section 3 that talks about exactly what we're doing. It provides to certain Minnesotans above 133% of the federal poverty guideline, single adults only. So this population does not require a federal waiver for us to implement a different kind of plan. And it provides an opportunity for those adults to receive a defined contribution amount that would be applied to in the private market for a health care plan. If you look on in the bill on Subdivision 3, it talks about what that contribution amount is. There is a schedule provided, and essentially what it does is it provides a sliding scale, a premium amount or a contribution amount from the state depending on your age and income. It also provides that base contribution to be adjusted, so if you are on the lower end of the income scale, that base contribution is increased by 50%. If you are on the upper end of the income scale, that base contribution is reduced by about 20%. This contribution may only be used to buy healthcare insurance. In addition, if a person would go through the underwriting process and found to not be suitable to be enrolled in a private health care plan, it does provide an additional 20% to the premium to be applied to coverage that would be found in the MCHA system. We also have provisions in Subdivision 3 that would require that there be some participation on the part of enrollees, so that the plan, the law would say that no more than 90% of the premium would be funded by this contribution. In other words, we're trying to suggest that people who are involved in this plan ought to pay some portion of the premium as they currently do under Minnesota Care. There's also language in the bill that would give a reduction of 5% if a person chose to buy a policy that did not include mental health or chemical dependency treatment. So there is an incentive in the bill for people who are qualifying for this program to make sure that the coverage that they buy does have mental health and chemical dependency coverage. The other part of this bill that we're asking for is the opportunity for families above 133 to participate subject to a federal waiver. And so there's language in the bill that directs the commissioner to seek waivers to permit that to occur. But it does not presume that that will happen in the savings that the bill anticipates. And there are savings. The bill as it is written, applying to just single adults over 133, would have about a $20 million saving in the first biennium and almost a $100 million saving in the second biennium. And so members, we think this is a good plan. We think that it will save money over time. We think it will provide better coverage. I want to direct your attention. I think you have in front of you a letter from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce supporting this bill. And one of the reasons is that it does provide better reimbursement rates to providers in the private insurance market. And it also does not have the $10,000 cap on the upper limit for hospitalization. So currently people who are enrolled in Minnesota Care, they have coverage, but if they end up in the hospital, their maximum coverage is $10,000. And so if you are in the hospital under Minnesota Care and you're there for more than a day or two, you're in trouble. If you have a private insurance plan, you have unlimited upper end coverage. So again, members, we think this is a better plan, and it also will save the state money. Part of the idea with this bill is to recognize that all of us have an obligation and the capability of managing our health care, and we ought to do that. And this bill presumes that. We recognize that people make decisions every day about what they choose to do, what foods they eat, what exercises they may or may not do. A number of things go into what translates into our state of health. And we recognize that those things are made by personal decisions, and people need to be responsible for the decisions they make, and if there are costs associated with it, for bearing those costs as well. So what this plan does is recognize that people are free to go to a marketplace and purchase an insurance policy that meets their needs. And that's what this is doing. So we would encourage your support. I think that this is the direction that we need to take going forward if we are going to have health care for low-income Minnesotans that is sustainable. I don't believe that the current plan we have in place that we can continue to fund at the rate that the increase that we're seeing. So I would encourage your support and would entertain any questions.
Further discussion on House File 8, Senator Berglund.
Madam President, members, I would urge people in this chamber to vote against House File 8. It is a bill that takes away 60% of the benefit that people in Minnesota Care have today. And that's according to the fiscal note, not according to, you know, the math of Senator Berglund. How does this 60% reduction in benefit translate? It translates into higher deductibles and higher copays. Why do we have Minnesota Care for people whose employer does not provide them with insurance? Because they can't afford to pay for insurance otherwise. If they can't afford to pay for the insurance otherwise, they can't afford to pay for 60% more in copays and deductibles than the plan offers them today. What will this reduction in benefit translate into? It will translate into people not getting preventative care, not taking care of things in an office visit, waiting until things are bad enough that they have to be in the hospital. Even allowing a plan for people not to buy mental health or chemical dependency coverage is a dangerous step, because oftentimes we know that these are not issues that people always know about ahead of time that they're going to need the coverage for. And when they don't have mental health or chemical dependency coverage, oftentimes they end up in other state programs at state taxpayer expense. Another thing that we lose out when we talk about this approach to Minnesota Care is the idea of savings, administrative savings that are generated by pooled purchasing. Yes, Minnesota Care beneficiaries have choices about which plan they take, but the state negotiates the contract, holds down those administrative costs, requires certain quality outcomes be provided to people through the plan that they have, and all of that will be lost through this approach. So, members, the Minnesota Care program is a sustainable program. It's been fairly stable throughout the time of its existence. At the moment, it has a deficit projected in the future in the account because of the very drastic things that were done to the GAMC program and really pushing many GAMC enrollees into Minnesota Care. That problem has been remedied now because we have the MA buy-in for those people. So Minnesota Care will stabilize over time. There are other ways to solve the temporary deficiency in the healthcare access fund without taking these drastic steps that greatly reduce the coverage that people otherwise would have. So I urge you to vote against this bill today. Thank you.
Further discussion on House File 8. Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Madam President. I, too, rise in opposition to this bill. As we have watched the debate go across the country with regard to health care, I have often thought that when that federal health care bill was passed, the greatest mistake was that it was passed based on, really in many ways, the Massachusetts law. And that, in fact, if it were passed based on the Minnesota practice, there wouldn't have been so much conflict and debate. If you recall, there was quite a bit of conversation with regard to a public option, and there was outcries about, you know, whether or not that should be or should not be in the bill. And I remember having breakfast with former Governor Carlson at the time and saying to him, why is that such a big deal? You and our state legislature created a public option in Minnesota Care many years ago, and it's working wonderfully. And he, too, shared that belief and has now become engaged in this conversation with regard to dismantling Minnesota Care. You know, I commend those who were serving long before I, who created that, Senator Berglund obviously being the primary person, but it was a bipartisan effort, and it did take the political muscle that a governor can provide as well to get that done. The thing that we have done in Minnesota is that we have the least uninsured in the country and the lowest costs. When we have a Minnesota program that's actually working, and this is not the state providing health care for people, the Minnesota Care is farmed out to the private insurance companies. They're the ones who are serving this population, but we are being the access point for those people who may not have the ability to ferret through the difficult bureaucratic barriers to coverage. That is why our uninsured percentage is so much lower, because we have done these reforms. We have been leaders in cost containment. We have worked carefully with the medical community, the Mayo Clinics, Allina, the doctors, and we have come together to solve these problems. We have created some of the most future trends in cost containment of any in the nation. And so I think that this bill is a step backwards. It would create more people to be uninsured. Those people who are at the lowest end of the economic scale are not going to have the resources to figure out what is the best policy. In addition, they aren't going to be able to pay the deductibles. We've heard that. The private market has not promised to offer a different product that would have these deductibles below. And Senator Han is right. One problem of Minnesota Care is the cap on our payments, that limit of what we'll pay. So why wouldn't Senator Han work with the private providers and the Commissioner of Health and those in the legislature to negotiate to lift those caps? That's really the direction we ought to go. We ought not to dismantle a program that is a leading program in the nation. We ought to instead identify the one thing that is a barrier to solving these challenges and fix that. So I understand the chamber thinks this is a way to go. I think that this is not the direction we ought to be taking.
Further discussion, Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam President. I only have a few comments on this bill, and I want to applaud Senator Han for bringing this forth. When we pay $6,000 for every single person on this plan, and we give them a maximum of $10,000 back in the hospital, I don't think that's a good buy in anybody's mind. So giving them the opportunity and a way to get care out in the private market that has unlimited coverage on the top end seems to me a much better way to go.
Further discussion on House File 8. Senator Marty.
Madam President, Senator Gazelka, Senator Bonoff told you the answer to it. Let's lift the cap on hospitalization for Minnesota Care. Fix that problem. Don't destroy the system. Somebody who's making a few thousand dollars a year trying to provide health care for themselves, buying a health care plan with a $3,000 deductible, forget about how they're going to pay the co-payments. I remember when Senator Hand presented the bill, one of his witnesses said, how are these low-income folks going to pay the co-payments? Well, they can go to a community clinic and beg them to waive the co-payments. I mean, the whole plan for the bill is having people go beg for their health care. Why don't we provide health care? These folks aren't going to stop getting sick because they can't afford the deductible. They're going to end up in the hospital. It's going to cost us more. We're taking away health care. We're making it worse. If you've got a problem with the fact that there's a cap on hospitalization, yes, let's remove it. A lot of us have been asking for that for years. Fix that problem. Don't destroy the whole system.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam President. I think my point is that we're already spending $6,000 for every person on and only giving them $10,000 coverage. Can you imagine what we'll have to pay for every person if we increase that cap? I don't think the government does a very good job running health insurance in any form, you know, but this is a clear indication that the dollars that we pay for the benefits that they get back is not working.
Further discussion, it'll be Senator Higgins and then Senator Berglund. Senator Higgins had her hand up. So,
Madam President, I'm wondering whether people in this room today know what 133% of poverty is, or of the federal poverty guidelines for 2011. For one person, $14,000 and 484. Now, anybody other than a single person is not eligible for this plan until Minnesota goes to the federal government and asks for a waiver to let families be on this plan, which they're not going to do because we already have an existing program that covers them. They're not going to do that. So, this is all about a single person with no kids making $14,484 a year. Not a month, a year. And the plan that's before us today would say that these folks are going to get a couple of $100 a month to go buy high deductible health insurance. And that amount of money will probably get them maybe a $5,000 deductible, maybe a $7,000 deductible, maybe even higher. So when you're making not even $15,000 a year, how in the world do we expect anyone to get any health care coverage at all through this plan that somebody has dreamed up, when they first have to pay $5,000 out of pocket? Well, we know the answer. They aren't going to get any health care coverage. If you look on page 3 of the bill, it sets out some of the amounts that will be for co-pays, for example. Tell me how someone at this income level is going to pay a $200 copay to go to the emergency room. Tell me how somebody is going to pay a $100 copay at an urgent care center. Laboratory covered at 80%. That's assuming they get there and they've already paid their $5,000. This is not a workable program for the people at which it is aimed to. People at 133% of poverty. It's a nice idea for our people making $60,000, $70,000 a year. it's not a good idea for the people who are to be covered by Minnesota Care. Please vote no.
Further discussion, Senator Berglund, then Senator Carlson. Senator Berglund.
Madam President, I just wanted to give one bit of information to help Senator Gazelka understand this program better. Minnesota Care was always designed not to have a rich hospital benefit. Now, that's not to say that it shouldn't be richer than it is, because it's never been raised since the inception of the program 15 years ago. But the way the program was designed, it was designed to encourage people to go to a primary care doctor's office and not to go to the hospital. And it's worked that way. Compared to other plans, it has much fewer people using the hospital. And so even though we've had this hospital cap that's needed updating for a number of years, and we've tried to update it, had bills be vetoed by Governor Pawlenty, did not want the hospital cap raised, we've had fewer than a third of the people that go into the hospital use up their cap, and we've had many, many fewer people go into the hospital under this program. They are really encouraged to use outpatient benefits, and they do. And that is how we save money in our healthcare system. This bill is designed to do exactly the opposite. People will not go into their primary care clinic. They will not be using outpatient services because they have to pay for that out of pocket. And there will be more hospital use, and as a result, there will be more healthcare spending going on under the program that is proposed here today. So again, I urge people to vote no.
Further discussion, Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Madam President. I just want to clear up something that I think might be a misunderstanding. If I understand Senator Hand's bill correctly, the people that would get the voucher to apply towards health insurance can use it for any insurance product available on the market, which would include a $250 deductible plan. Those are choices that the individuals would be able to make. It's not a high deductible plan, although they could choose that if they wanted to. They could choose an HSA compatible type plan, but they could also choose a simple $250 deductible plan. And I think I stand in support of this bill. Thank you.
Further discussions. Senator Hand, do you want to make to that point? Because I do have Senator Goodwin, or is it Senator Goodwin?
Thank you, Madam President. I have an amendment at the desk. The number is A51.
Senator Goodwin offers the A51 amendment. The Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Goodwin moves to amend House File Number 8 as follows. Pursuant to Rule 45, adopted by the Senate May 3, 2011, page 1, after line 7, this is the A51 amendment.
Senator Goodwin to the amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, I think what I'd like to try here is a pilot program where legislators are on this plan that is supposed to be such a wonderful plan. So what the amendment does is it deletes the Minnesota Care members from having to take this plan and only puts the legislature, the members of the legislature, not the staff, but the members of the legislature on this plan. And it has a two-year sunset so that we can have, it would be a sunset in 2014, so basically 3 years, so that we would be able to determine if this plan is working the way that we think it should, if it saves money as we think it should, and do an experiment here on ourselves and try this out and see if it works. Nowhere in this House File 8 does it say that legislators have to be on this plan, and I hear some of the senators stand up here and say what a wonderful deal this is for people. So if it's a wonderful deal, let's try it out on ourselves and see if it works. If it works, then we can talk about it again and apply it differently. But for now, let's apply it just to ourselves and be fair about this. Thank you, Madam President.
Discussion to the amendment. Senator Hahn.
Members, I just seen the amendment for the first time, and I'm not sure what the intent of the amendment is or exactly what it would do, but I would oppose the amendment. We are talking about a insurance program that Minnesota provides for low-income Minnesotans, and there are requirements, eligibility requirements, and so forth that would continue to be in place for the low-income health insurance. So I'm not sure how this applies, but I would urge members to oppose it.
Further discussion on the A51 amendment. Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It applies exactly the way I said it does. It would apply to the members of the legislature exactly the way that it's written, and only to members of the legislature, except for the fact that what would be deleted would be that only a one-person family can qualify for this, so that we can qualify our families for it as well. And if it's good, that's all it does is basically say that it just applies to Minnesota members of the legislature and takes out the rest. So I think it's pretty simple. It's a good way to find out if this is such a great plan. I'm willing to be on this and give it a try rather than put other people on it who I don't know how it'll affect. Let's try it out on ourselves first. It's simple. And, Madam President, I'd like a roll call vote. Thank you.
Roll call has been requested. A roll call is granted. Further discussion on the A51 amendment. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam President. I oppose this amendment. I'm one of the senators here who waived the state's health insurance program. As a citizen legislator, I feel that it's my responsibility to pay for my own health insurance. And I'm not going to question Senator Goodwin's motives as to this amendment, but this is a little bit of political tomfoolery. I don't think that it's going to accomplish anything for the low-income people in this state. It's trying to put senators on the record saying that we're low-income people. I waived the insurance program because I believe we're citizen legislators. It is up to us. It's our responsibility, just like I believe that all the citizens of Minnesota should have the opportunity to make decisions about their own health care, and that involves a little bit of responsibility. So I'm going to oppose this amendment.
Further discussion, Senator Berglund. Senator Goodwin, as the author of the amendment, was it to that point?
Yes, Madam Chair. Madam President, it is to that point, and I would ask you to remind the Senator that we don't question motives here. This is not political tomfoolery. This is, let's apply it to ourselves first, and let's see if it works. If it's such a grand plan, let's test that out before we make it apply to others. And I really resent the insinuation that this is political tomfoolery. Try it out. If it works, then you can honestly say this works, and we can apply it to others. Thank you.
Further discussion, Senator Berglund.
Madam President and members, those of us who serve in this body all come from various circumstances. Some of us, maybe we don't need the health insurance our job provides. That's fine. Some of us do need the health insurance our job provides. Obviously, I am not making $14,000 a year, as Senator Higgins pointed out, people on the Minnesota Care Program do. But I rise to tell you that I cannot afford this kind of a plan for my family. So I'm not going to support your amendment, Senator Goodwin, because I don't want this for my own family, and I don't want it for the families in Minnesota who work hard to make $14,000 a year. We should put this whole bill to bed by voting red.
Further discussion on House File 8. Seeing none, we're on the amendment. Further discussion on the A51 amendment. Seeing none, roll call has been requested. Secretary will take the roll on the A51 amendment. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 9 ayes and 56 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Further discussion on House File 8. Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, if you didn't like that one, maybe you'll like this one. I have another amendment at the desk. It is the A50 amendment.
Senator Goodwin offers the A50 amendment. The secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Goodwin moves to amend House File Number 8 as amended pursuant to Rule 45 adopted by the Senate May 3, 2011 as follows. Page 1 after line 7, insert. This is the A50 amendment.
To the A50 amendment, Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Madam President. And what this amendment does then is keep the bill the way it is, but add the members of the legislature to the program. So we can, right along with those Minnesotans that we're going to be cutting their health care, we can cut our own as well. If we're willing to do this for them, we're willing to do this for us. So, again, Madam Chair, I'd like a roll call vote. Thank you.
Roll call has been requested and roll call is granted. Further discussion to the A50 amendment. Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, I would oppose this amendment. The intent of the bill is to reform the insurance program for low-income Minnesotans. I appreciate the desire to reform the health care for state employees, including legislators, and I would just remind the body that we do have such a provision in Senator Perry's state government bill where we do offer significant reform along the same lines as this bill for state employees. So members who like this approach can vote for Senator Perry's omnibus bill.
Further discussion to the A50 amendment. Seeing none, roll call has been requested. The secretary will take the roll on the A50 amendment. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 15 ayes and 50 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Further discussion on House File 8. Seeing none, the secretary will give House File 8 its third reading.
House File Number 8, a bill for an act relating to human services, third reading.
Further discussion, Senator Marty.
Madam President, members, Senator Goodwin's First Amendment, which I did support because I thought it was better to stick it to 200 people than 200,000 people. But this bill, Senator Gazelka, you talked about how we're paying $6,000 a person for a $10,000 hospital benefit. I don't know what percentage of the cost goes into the hospital benefit, but it was pretty small, minuscule amount of it. The whole point of providing people health care is to keep them healthy, to help them be able to take care of the health before they need the emergency room. You do this, you're going to kick people are just not going to buy the plan. They can't afford it. And somebody said, well, if this plan doesn't require them, Senator Carlson said, this doesn't require them to get a $3,000 or $5,000 or $10,000 or $15,000 deductible. Yes, Blue Cross sells $15,000 deductible plans, but you can't afford a $250 deductible plan. There's no way a low-income person can afford them. You look up Google Blue Cross for yourself and try and find one. It's pretty hard to find because they hardly sell them anymore. There's no way you could afford to buy it. In effect, people are going to be choosing not to buy it. For those who do, when they come up against a $3,000 or $5,000 or $7,000 deductible, they're not going to get health care. They will use the emergency room. They don't magically stop getting sick. Sometimes they get sicker when they don't do the preventive care. We're going to all pay for it. They're going to pay for it with poorer health. We're going to pay for it economically. This is a foolish decision. I urge you to reject the bill.
Further discussion? Senator Sharon.
Thank you, Madam President. As I understand this bill, it looks like a subsidy, and I am really struggling with a subsidy program to an insurance industry that will cover a lot of people and not have to pay very much out because they can't afford to access their health insurance. But what I wanted to raise and draw to your attention, Madam President and colleagues, is the letter that has been distributed to you from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. And I'm hoping you'll look at that because much of the letter is really important information. It talks about budget trends, the cost of health care increasing over the next 25 years by 8%. It talks about the important discussions that we've been having on way of controlling health care costs, and about the chamber's concerns about that for their businesses. And then in the third paragraph, they talk about the importance of exploring new models of provision, state health care programs, so that we can cut those costs. And supporting, it says, especially delivery models that offer greater quality and better outcomes for patients. And then the letter falls apart. It's amazing to me that after saying so many things that are founded in data and research, that they would then suggest that Senate File 32 is one of those models. Instead of acknowledging that we've been on the course of doing health care reform for a substantial period of time, and then in order for us to support changes in that trajectory, we should be continuing to support more of the changes supporting those things that we've been doing instead of cutting their budgets. For example, the new models that will really change the trajectory about that, and not this bill, are the changes that we are making in how we pay for health care. The providers are paid on the basis of outcome instead of on the volume of the services that they provide. That we focus on those outcomes is the most critical component of how we can change the trajectory of health care. We also want to change the trajectory of healthcare by impacting chronic disease. Chronic disease is one of the most enormous parts of the cost of the healthcare delivery system. If we eliminate those things because people can't afford it that drive them into their healthcare provider earlier rather than later, we are just adding to the very cost driver in the system, which is chronic disease. We also want to be able to increase transparency so that we can do some comparison of providers' outcomes and costs in a way that people can have responsible choices about whom they go to and from whom they seek care. That's how to change the trajectory of the cost of health care. We need to change from institutional care, from this high-cost care that everybody's concerned about, to community-based care for the elderly as well as the disabled, and that requires us to put our dollars not on the back end but on the front end in terms of being able to access the primary care physicians. We need to change from high-cost specialty care by allowing people at mid-level practitioner levels to practice at full scope of their license and to develop new models that allow mid-level practitioners to perform those services. Not by giving money to the insurance companies to subsidize them and then allow them to not have to include, to be able to disallow people who are too expensive, people who have too high a risk, and shove them over into the state program MCHA. All of this is about somehow talking about saving dollars.
But it doesn't save dollars. It gives a subsidy to the insurance companies and still leaves all of the risk and all of the uncompensated care costs to the state or to the providers. I urge a vote against this unwise bill.
Further discussion on House File Number 8. Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam President. And members, appreciate the discussion. And we talk a lot about health care reform in this body and other legislatures across the country, and we're talking about it at the federal level. And I would just remind you that we've been talking about health care reform for decades, two, three decades. And what have we seen as a result of all that discussion? We've seen more and more government involvement in the what used to be a marketplace for health care. And we don't have that anymore. And every time we run up against a particular problem that we've detected because of some reform we did previously, the answer is always, well, we need more government. And, of course, we need more taxation to pay for that. One of the points that was raised in the debate we had was that we've been trying for years to raise the hospitalization cap in Minnesota Care. Now, why hasn't that happened? I think everybody says, well, that's a good idea. Why hasn't that happened? And I think it hasn't happened for the very simple reason that it would be very, very costly to the state to do that. And who's going to pay for that? Taxpayers have to pay for it. And there's been no way to determine how to give that higher level, whatever the cap is, determined to be, how do you pay for that? And this is part of the problem. We talk about health care reform, but we don't talk about trying to create a marketplace for reform, trying to create a marketplace to allow people to make decisions and to create the incentives to provide more choices and more opportunity for people to make decisions. A lot of the debate that we've had on this issue presumes that people who are low income are not capable of making good decisions about their health care or about their behavior as it affects their health care. And I think that assumption is wrong. We all make those choices, all of us. We should presume that everyone is capable of doing that, and we ought to create a marketplace that presumes that people are responsible, want to be responsible. And we should do that. The current structure we are on is not fiscally sustainable. We know that. It talks about the trends in healthcare going up 8 or 10%. Our HHS budget, which is the biggest part of our state budget, is forecasted this year to increase by 22% over the previous year. Now, that's not all healthcare costs. But the point is, having government try to manage this doesn't work. We don't try to have government manage our food distribution system or our manufacturing economy or our retail economy, but we say we want government to manage this particular part of our economy. And it doesn't work, and we've been on this path to experiment for years. Now, this bill does not reform the healthcare system. It is not a panacea. It doesn't do all the things that need to be done, but it is a step in the right direction, and we need to take that step. What it does is it provides people an opportunity, and to the extent that they need help, to participate in a marketplace. And that very act of giving more people access to participate in a marketplace is going to create a dynamic that will, I believe, create more choices in that marketplace and create the incentives to bring about greater transparency. Because when people are spending their own money, they want to know what it's for. When somebody else is paying the bill, people have less concern about what they're getting. And that's part of the, I guess, the idea behind this bill. Members, at some point we're going to have to get serious about real reform in healthcare. And real reform means giving people an opportunity to make choices and helping people who need help to do that. And we've heard talk about how this is unaffordable. And remember, this is for low-income Minnesotans, 133 to 250% of poverty. To the extent that any of those individuals own cars, their out-of-pocket expense for their transportation would exceed any of the anticipated out-of-pocket expenses for a health care plan. This is not impossible for people to do. We think that this is a good plan. We think people should embrace this plan. We have got to find a different way to do health care than continuing to create a excessive bureaucracy, trying to make decisions in legislatures, legislative committees about what things should cost and what is transparency and how do we define questions we don't ask about any other sector of the economy. Those kinds of decisions are not appropriate, I don't believe, for legislatures to make. Those are decisions made in a marketplace. And our job as policymakers ought to be to try to encourage the development of a marketplace. And this is a step. It doesn't solve all the problems. There are other things we need to do, but this is a step. So, members, I would encourage your support of the bill and ask for a yes vote.
Further discussion, Senator Berglund.
Madam President and members, let's get it straight. The state of Minnesota does not manage the care for people in Minnesota Care. We contract with managed care companies to do that. They are private companies. And we are on the cusp of contracting directly with providers to do this. And we are on the cusp of contracting with them in a way where they will have more incentives to keep people healthy and out of hospitals, out of emergency rooms. And they will be paid in a way where they will be rewarded for quality and not for quantity of services. This plan throws all that in the garbage can. Because everybody has to go buy their own policy in the marketplace, there will be no ability for the state to contract directly with providers to do a better job of keeping people healthy. And while we're talking about that marketplace, let's just remember that's a marketplace that denies people who have pre-existing conditions access to private insurance. Minnesota Care doesn't do that. Minnesota Care says if you have diabetes, we want you more than ever to be healthy, to be seeing a primary care physician regularly. What happens to those people under this bill that get denied coverage? They have to go to MSHA to get their coverage. MSHA doesn't have anything better than a $500 deductible 80-20 policy. And believe me, nobody who's in this plan is going to be able to afford to buy that kind of coverage. It's very expensive to buy that kind of coverage in MSHA. So again, let's just remember we are on a path of healthcare reform. It's a bipartisan plan that was passed in 2008, and it is being implemented as we speak. This group of people need to be in that plan. They don't need to be changed to a plan with 60% reduction in their benefits. Vote no on this bill.
Further discussion, Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Madam President. And I would just like to make the point that I think the idea that the state or Minnesota doesn't manage health care is just not true. We do. Yes, we contract with managed care providers, but we tell them exactly what to do. It is a distinction without a difference. If you go to the marketplace, as we call it today, and you direct those participants that you must provide this, 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 and at this cost, that's not a marketplace. That is the state legislature or bureaucracy making decisions about what health care should be and saying to people who participate, this is what you have. That is not a marketplace. That is not choice. That is not personal responsibility. That is the state managing health care. And that is the fundamental premise of all the what we have called reform over the decades has been, that somehow we believe that centralizing decision-making, whether it be in the state of Minnesota and St. Paul or, as we see now, in Washington, D.C., the presumption is that some body of elected legislators can figure this out, that this large sector of the economy, the people in this room can understand the intricacies of it and make decisions about how it should work and try to make that happen through law. And I don't know of any other sector of the economy that we would even think to try to accomplish that. But we do with health care. And we've seen what the costs are, and we've seen what has happened in other countries that have gone even further than we have. It doesn't do any good to say you've got a health insurance plan if you don't have any providers willing to provide care at the cost reimbursement that those plans provide. And that is the fact. And one of the virtues of going to a marketplace is that you can then access that marketplace for health care and you can use your insurance to pay full cost. And there are incentives in there to make sure that those people who are providing that care are going to compete for those dollars, and there are incentives to try to do more for less, which is the standard in other parts of the economy. That is a challenge that every business has. How can I do something better at higher quality for less cost? But here in the healthcare world, we say, well, we've got to try to find a way to create a law to make people do that, when that is the natural structure of a marketplace. And so, members, this is not, again, the entire way to this is not all of reform. This is a component of it. Senator Berglund is right. There are people who will not get through the underwriting. They will end up going to the MCHA, but we have in the bill a provision that takes and increases the contribution by 20% to participate in that MCHA structure. There are other bills, another bill that we have that's in the legislature this year that talks about reforming the MCHA structure to provide more opportunities in the MCHA structure to get different kinds of policies and at lower cost. The question really, members, fundamentally is about whether we're going to do reform through more government, more legislation, more rulemaking, or whether we're going to say we trust people to make decisions about the things that are most important in their lives, one of which is healthcare. Do we trust people to do that? And to the extent that they need help, financial help, are we willing to give them help? Or do we have to dictate to them, here's exactly what you have to do, here's who you have to see, here, do we do that? And I say no. And this is, I think, an important distinction. When we talk about reform, what is the direction we're headed for? Are we headed for a better marketplace, or are we headed for more government regulation? And I fear, seeing what's happening in Washington and seeing what's been happening in this state, that we have been headed for more government, more bureaucracy, more laws, and more cost to the taxpayer. That model will not work. Members, I urge your support for the bill.
Secretary will take the role, but Senator Sharon.
I just can't leave it said that what we're talking about here is something that's in the best interest of the taxpayers of the state of Minnesota. What we're talking about is not something that contains the cost of health care. What we're not talking about is something that shrinks the size of government. What we're talking about is a subsidy to the insurance companies, to a private sector whose motivation is profit. It's a profit for the people who invest in those insurance companies. And that's not who we want in charge of the decision-making on my tax dollars. That's not who I want in charge of deciding what you can and can't get in your health care benefits and what you will and will not cover. I do think there's a proper relationship for the government to be involved in decision-making when it involves state tax dollars, to make sure that they're going for health care improvement rather than subsidy improvements for those who get profits from the insurance company. This does nothing to shrink the size of government. It raises the risk for the cost of health care to government and sends the profiteering over to the insurance industry. And those excessive costs are because they will not cover people that have pre-existing conditions. And they will be able to not pay costs of health care because people will not access health care. They can't afford their co-pays. They can't afford their deductibles. So what you're doing is eliminating people from entering the healthcare delivery system. When they do, they're very ill. It's uncompensated care. Who picks up the tab on that? The state of Minnesota, the taxpayers, the providers who don't get paid, and those of us who are buying health insurance who have those costs built into our insurance premiums. There is nothing about this that sustains costs. There's nothing about this that reduces the size of government. There's nothing about this that creates sustainability. There's nothing in this that reduces the trajectory of the cost of health care. What it is a subsidy program for a private industry whose primary objective is profiteering.
Senator Marty.
Madam President, Senator Hand, I think healthcare ought to be as decentralized as possible. I think the doctor and patients ought to be making the decisions, not bureaucrats, not insurance companies, nobody else. Decentralization is it. But this concept that people are going to make wise choices in this marketplace, you know, the sicker you are, the less likely you are to have the income to be able to afford the healthcare you need. It's kind of inversely proportional. The healthier you are, the better your chance of being able to afford healthcare. The sicker you are, the less likely you are. And simply giving somebody a $3,000 deductible doesn't make them stop getting cancer. Doesn't make them choose not to get in an auto accident. All it does is make their care less affordable. You're not going to get care there. That's a fantasy to suggest that the marketplace is going to make people decide to not get cancer. That's not the way the world works.
Further discussion, Senator Kielash.
Madam Chair, part of this bill that I do not get is that we've been hearing how Minnesota needs to run like a business. And what I don't understand is how any business would possibly change directions on a health care plan and do it in 6 weeks without any additional personnel or whatever. This bill is impossible to enforce because July 1st is when we're supposed to start booking savings on it. You know, we haven't got people to implement the changes. There's no funding for this year. The people that are working on maintaining the current program have to spend their time doing that. It's impossible to meet the deadline that is in this bill. And I just think that that's one of the many reasons. If we're going to make change, and, you know, I'm not supporting any of Senator Hahn's changes, he has the majority and the right to do that, but at least it ought to be possible to meet the deadlines for the state of Minnesota's employees and the commissioners. This does not allow that. I think it should be voted no and find some better way to transition if that's the direction they choose to go. Thank you.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam President. First of all, I don't know that anybody said that the state ought to run like a business. I've not said that today, and haven't heard anybody else say that. That's not what this bill is about. But to the extent the concerns that Senator Kielash raises, there was a fiscal note done on this bill, and all the costs associated with implementing this were considered. And it still shows a savings for this population in the first biennium of over $20 million, and then the second biennium and going forward close to $100 million. And so those costs and whatever those transitional elements might be are a part of the fiscal note. And to the extent that we think fiscal notes are accurate, all those things have been addressed in the costs and the projections in the fiscal note. I also want to just make the point that to Senator Sharon's comment about subsidizing insurance companies, we already pay a lot of money to insurance providers, plans, into the current program. Is that subsidizing them? Is anything that we contract with the state, with a private sector operation, is that subsidizing them? What this is doing is saying insurance is not a bad thing. Insurance is a good thing. Insurance is the way that people historically over hundreds of years, centuries, have figured out how to manage risk. And it's a good thing. And it is a useful thing. And to the extent that it can help us manage the cost and risk of health care expenses, we ought to try to take advantage of it. And so rather than saying this is a subsidy, no, we are paying or helping people to pay for a product that is useful. Useful to them, useful to us. We all have car insurance, I hope, which is a law that we have to. We have homeowners insurance. We have other kinds of insurance. Insurance is not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing in health care either, but we need to make sure we have a marketplace for it. Insurance doesn't say that all costs, dollar one, of everything that we insure is paid for. If we had an automotive insurance program in this state that is modeled after what we think healthcare insurance is, it would be unaffordable to people in this state. We'd be saying, well, for $20, anything that goes wrong with my car, it gets fixed. I need a new engine, I need new tires, I need whatever, $20, and that happens. I should not pay any dollars out of pocket to operate my car. My insurance will pay for that. People don't think that because that's not what insurance does. Insurance does not supposed to take care of every single dollar of cost. It is to protect us against catastrophic, unanticipated costs that most people are not able to sustain on their own. That's what insurance is. And we have got to start taking seriously the idea that if we're going to create a model that is sustainable, we need to understand how the market works and find the tools that will help us get there and use them. And again, this is not a solution to the whole problem. There's lots of things we need to do. But this is a step, an important step in the right direction. I urge your support.
Further discussion on the bill. Senator Berglund and then Senator Sharon.
Madam President and Senator Hahn, just to be perfectly clear, yes, we contract with health plans today to provide this care. But it is a transparent contract. We pretty much know how much they're spending on health care, how much they're spending on administration, and how much they have left over. And some people around here are a little alarmed about how much has been left over recently. An opportunity. No opportunity should go untaken advantage of. But under your proposal, There will be no transparency. We won't know that we are spending money and that most of it is going to buy health care for people. Most of it could be going for profits to for-profit insurance companies. And there will be no way to ever know. And so the plan we have, the way we buy our care today, the way we help people afford health care today is a transparent proposition. And we know if we're getting the value we believe we should get for it. Let's not change that. Vote no.
Further discussion, Senator Sharon.
Thank you, Madam President. And I think Senator Berglund spoke to the issue of the subsidy, which this clearly is to the insurance industry. And it's an opportunity for us to talk about the difference of what it is that we're doing. In the Minnesota Care Program, by the way, there is it's a premium program. These are for working families, and this bill is for single adults. So there is a contribution being made based on income to the program. So the notion that people, this generalized statement that people on Minnesota Care are not responsible or not taking responsibility in the choices that they make is simply an unfair statement about people who serve us, who are working. They greet us at the banks when they cash our checks. They serve us at tables in the restaurants. They when your car goes through some kind of a car wash, they're wiping off the water and they're being paid barely a living wage. And they're not covered by insurance in their businesses, but they do pay as a part, if they're not meeting these low level of poverty, they are paying a premium in this program. It's for working people. And it is a premium-based program that's supported by a provider tax that's based on the provision of care by physicians and other healthcare providers. So who, by the way, agreed to this in order to make sure that this money is directed not towards the profits of an insurance company, but directly to the care of the patients that they're serving and who in the past they had to serve without compensation. So it's the people who are on Minnesota Care are clearly responsible people. They work and they pay a percentage of their income towards a premium. And they choose who they go to for their care. So they have choice. And they can struggle with, they don't have the same kind of struggle that you might have with an insurance company who's trying to increase their profits rather than pay out the expenses that they have to pay for a person who has gotten sick. So it doesn't resolve the issue of restricting the size of government. It doesn't change the trajectory of the cost of health care, which we will be able to achieve if we stay on our course of trying to change how health care is paid for. We encourage people to get care early with their primary care physician and go to health care homes where care is managed. We use community-based services for seniors and for the disability community. There are a number of programs that we've been working on for a long time that we will see an impact in terms of that huge growth in the trajectory of health care, some of which we will not be able to control because of the growing senior population and because that trajectory is moving substantially. So it is a subsidy program. We aren't going to be able to see how this money is spent. We have been fighting with the insurance agencies and the healthcare committees to try to get a look at how, where their money is spent, what they're attributing to administrative costs, what there is going to direct care services. It's a struggle to get anything out of these companies. And that only becomes worse with this proposal. It takes away the opportunity for people who do not have adequate income to buy health insurance, to have access to early care. It doesn't change the trajectory. It doesn't reduce the size of government. It takes all the risk away from the insurance industry and puts it back on the public sector. It doesn't allow the taxpayer confidence that the money is going for what it intended it to go to. This is a bad bill. It's a bad idea. I urge your vote against this bill.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a final comment. I just want to make it clear that there's nothing in this proposal that presumes that people in the low-income marketplace are not responsible. And that's, I've never said that. In fact, I've said just the opposite. The bill presumes that people in low-income situations that may be temporary are perfectly capable, perfectly responsible. But when I hear opponents of this bill say, well, the lower-income people will not be able to figure out how to do this. They will not be able to figure out how to do insurance. They will not be able to figure out how to manage this. I reject that. So the presumption is that we make is that they are as responsible as you and I, that we are all human beings, that we have many things in common. Among those are the ability to make decisions about ourselves. And so this is not to reject at all the idea that the low-income Minnesotans are not responsible. Quite the contrary. The premise of the bill is that they are.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you. I know you'd like to close the conversation on this bill, but I can't leave it with the suggestion that what we were communicating is that low-income people, that what you were communicating is that people are not responsible, that this bill suggests that people are not responsible that are of low income. What we're saying is that they are responsible, that they have demonstrated that responsibility in the Minnesota Care Program. They do pay a premium. A part of their wages do go towards this. This is working families. What we are saying is what this bill does to people who have just moved above 133% of poverty, that they won't be able to afford and access their health care under this program, and that we will not be able to track and see how these health care dollars are spent, and that it will cause people to have high deductibles so that they won't be able to get that preventative care that they need. That's what we're saying, that these are responsible people. They've been responsible. They won't have access. It's restricted. All the risk goes over to the government. There's no shrinkage of government. None of the objectives that are articulated as the foundation for this bill are met by the bill and therefore should be defeated by this body.
Secretary will take the roll on House File 8. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 37 ayes and 28 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Remaining under motions and resolutions under special orders, we'll move to Senate File 930. Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam President and members of the Senate. Senate File 930 is the annual deficiency bill. And what it does is it covers unusual expenditures which were difficult to anticipate when setting previous balance budgets. And so each year we go through these and find some areas that were certainly unanticipated expenses and bring them back for consideration by the Finance Committee and the members of each body. The governor has also weighed in on these. His appropriations in this area are very similar to the numbers in this bill. We have $4.9 million, and he has $4.6 million recommended in it. He left off some money associated with the recount for his own election. But let me go through the expenses in the bill, appropriations. One of them for just over $2 million is an appropriation to match the FEMA disaster assistance to state agencies and local units of government for the spring of 2009 flooding. And you may recall we had a special session for this flooding event. And at that time, we put in estimated numbers. And it's very hard to know for sure what the actual costs will be. But because the federal government typically pays 75% and the local state match is 25%, ours ended up being a little higher than anticipated, just over $2 million. And so that is the biggest appropriation in this bill. Another one is $290,000 for the Board on Judicial Standards. And in the past couple of years, you may have heard of some special investigations and hearings for major disciplinary actions undertaken by the board for various judges who had perhaps gotten themselves into a little trouble. And so that cost, as I mentioned, was $290,000. It was well above their anticipated budget. Another one is for $38,000 for the state tax court. And because of an increase in their rent that occurred, they have found themselves short and not sure how they're going to continue operating for the rest of their fiscal year. They were saying that they might actually have to close down for the last 4 weeks of their fiscal year because they wouldn't have the money without this $38,000. And because the tax court actually brings in more money than it costs, it would be a loss to the state. So we're proposing to fund that amount. In the Secretary of State's area, there was a lawsuit that the American Broadcasting Companies brought against several states relating to election law. And part of it had to do with how far away the media could be when people went to polling sites. And they challenged our law, which we have since changed, but we lost the lawsuit. And so even though there were no punitive damages awarded, the court did award the legal costs, and they did even reduce those costs. But our share in Minnesota of paying those costs is $149,000. And so we have that in here, as well as $322,000 for reimbursement costs related to the 2010 recount. The way this works is the counties are given an amount of money, 3 cents a ballot is my understanding, and then this the Secretary of State's office surveyed the counties to find out if they had incurred additional costs for the recount. And they came back with an amount of which the Secretary of State would like to reimburse them, or their office reimbursed them perhaps $322,000, and we would plan to make up that difference in this proposal, because this would be going to the counties with the idea that we want to continue to have the counties as partners with us if another statewide recount would occur. It apparently is less expensive for us to do the recount at the county level than at the state level. And so we are trying to make sure that they will stay our partners in that. There's one more area that we are affecting here. And in 2005, the legislature asked the state to sell a certain amount of state lands, state properties. And they've been working on this goal for a number of years. But because of the soft real estate market, they've been really struggling to sell the amount asked for. And we have extended the deadline for the sales a couple of times, and the last deadline now in current law is June 30th, 2011. They actually think that they can sell $4.3 million worth of land by that date, but we have a request for them to sell $6.4 million, and they are not anticipating that they can make that goal. And so we're taking that off of the books for now, hoping that they can continue to move forward with the sale of the $4.3 million. And we did give them an additional tool. Senator Carlson has had a bill that has been passed in the Senate, signed by the governor, and it is in effect, that will let them sell that land at 75% of the appraised value instead of at the level that they were required to sell it at earlier, so they couldn't take lower offers and they were unable to move the parcels. So this should help them meet that goal, but they don't think they can go further. If we find out they can, however, I would be very friendly toward extending that deadline and trying to get that extra $2 million. But at this point, it doesn't seem like it is achievable. And so that is the language in the bill, and I will stand for questions.
Is there any discussion? Senator Perry.
Madam President, will Senator Roebling yield?
Senator Roebling will yield.
Senator Roebling, I just want to bring up a question here and go back to the fact, and I believe we talked about this in committee, when it was mentioned that admin had raised the rent for one of the departments, which created a $38,000 deficit into their budget. And the question was asked, was there a correlating deductions in other agencies, or was this just a budget increase for admin? Was that ever discussed and an answer given?
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam President. And Senator Perry, that is something we are still trying to get to the bottom of. And since this still has another step or two, we'll make every effort to address that before we give it final approval.
Senator Roebling, do you have some amendments?
Madam President, I am not going to offer the amendment.
Is there any further discussion? If not, the Secretary will give Senate File 930 its third reading.
Senate File Number 930, a bill for an act relating to state government, third reading.
The Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote? The Secretary will close the roll. There being 60 ayes and 4 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to.
Remaining under motions and resolutions, special order, we have Senate File 1115, special ordered. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Senate File 1115 is the Aquatic Invasive Species Prevention Bill. Now, I think a lot of members have, I'm sure, been hearing about this this bipartisan effort that we've been working on for some time. It's with regards to aquatic invasive species that are threatened to our natural resources across the state, and this matter needs to be taken seriously and with a sense of urgency, and that's why we're moving it, and hopefully we can get this done either before the opening fishing season or within a couple of days afterwards. It's been certainly a top priority of mine, as well as the governor and Republicans and Democrats alike. I work closely with Senator, and I thank Senator Gazelka, Senator Saxog, Senator Scoy, Senator Gimsey, and Hoffman, and also Senator Carlson, along with the DNR and various other stakeholders, in putting together a bill that will help, hopefully help stop the spread of invasive species. However, members, you need to understand that this is certainly not a silver bullet for invasive species, and it's something that we're going to have to continue to work on, and I'm certainly going to be doing that as well as the other members I talked about. This legislation intends to increase efforts to prevent the transportation and spread, obviously, of aquatic invasive species. It also achieves this goal by providing more authority for inspections and enforcement, restricting use in infested waters, and providing education to service providers and the general public. This legislation closely coincides with the DNR's proposal that also forces state agencies to abide by similar guidelines that are required by private enterprises in the general public. And if, for instance, there would be require the state agency to remain in a holding facility for at least 10 hours, fish and bait fish to be checked for invasive species before transporting and stocking aquatic life. It also requires the state agency to have to mark their nets and water equipment to ensure the equipment used on infested lakes is not on lakes without infestation. It also talks about the authority, members. It kind of beefs up the conservation officer's authority as well as law enforcement officers throughout the state. A conservation officer or a peace officer can order aquatic or macrophytes or prohibit invasive species from water-related equipment. Currently, they can just order the removal from watercraft or a trailer. That's in current law. A person must drain water-related equipment instead of just boating-related equipment. This would also include bait buckets. A lot of discussion on minnow buckets, members. It also allows an inspection to prohibit entrance into waters of the state if the individual refuses to allow inspection or to remove the or dispose of aquatic invasive species. It also allows the commissioner it states the commissioner is able to train and authorize individuals to inspect water-related equipment. That was a bill that was carried, I believe, by Senator Hoffman with regards to the people in business of moving docks and selling docks and shifting them around throughout the state of Minnesota. There will be some training done there. And those that actually get a three-year permit, they'll be doing their own training, of course, which is most generally seasonal kids and college kids that are working in the summer for these particular businesses. It also puts up the ability for having check stations. Now, I know this is somewhat scary to individuals. Over the years, we've had law enforcement has been able to put up check stations for different offenses. However, it does. This particular bill does cover that may be utilized in locations in proximity to watercraft or water equipment is placed or removed from state waters. It talks about operation of these check stations should have to minimize delays. In other words, they have to be done in a timely fashion. Now, members, this is not going to give the DNR or anybody authority to set up check stations on I-94 or a major highway. Where people are coming and traveling to and from our recreation part of the states, it's going to be very close to areas where you have infected waters, and that's going to be where it's going to happen. And again, I covered the
the training, the civil penalties were important. The DNR came to me with that, and we actually doubled the civil penalties in this bill. If you have any questions on that, I'm certainly willing to do that, to answer those questions. They're broadened to include water-related equipment instead of just watercraft, trailer, or plant harvesting. Education part of the bill requires watercraft owners to display a decal of aquatic invasive species rules. The decal must be displayed in full view of the operator. The decal will be provided by the DNR free of charge. That's a real positive thing. We had a lot of discussion with the conservation officers with regards to that. So, members, I stand for questions. This is a, again, this is a somewhat of an emergency bill, if you will, in that, as everyone knows, we're starting off our recreation and opening fishing season this weekend. And hopefully that as soon as we can get this passed, it actually will take effect June 13th of 2011, 1 month after it's hopefully passed. So it will give the conservation officers the ability to be able to enforce these, what we think are very important laws that are pertaining to our lakes and infesting of our lakes.
Further discussion on Senate File 1115. Senator Gimsey.
So, thank you, Madam President, and Senator Ingebrigtsen for bringing this bill. You've done a lot of very good work on it. And in my district, I have 30 lakes within 25 miles of my home. And so it's a very important issue for the folks, the land, the lakeshore owners, the sportsmen, and everybody in my district. And appreciate your good work on this. There is one small area that needs, I believe, to be corrected, and I would offer the A5 amendment.
Senator Gimsey offers the A5 amendment. Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Gimsey moves to amend Senate file number 1115 as follows. Page 12 after line 6, insert the A5 amendment.
To the amendment, Senator Gimsey.
Thank you, Madam President. What this amendment does is simply allows the commissioner to require mandatory decontamination of boats that have been used on infested waters in the state of Minnesota. And what this would do is, during the permitting process, of course, the DNR will know what the infested lakes are or where they are, and then allow for these decontamination units to be available during these fishing tournaments. It's a big concern in my district, where we would like to see some of our lakes, especially one that comes to mind that most of you may be familiar with, is Green Lake. The DNR has approved 26 fishing tournaments for this upcoming year, and 8 of those tournaments will be held on Green Lake. So there is a concern about the spread of zebra mussels, and with this language, the DNR will be able to have the authority to better contain it.
Further discussion on the A5 amendment. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Gimsey and I have talked about this amendment. We got together with the folks that were interested in bringing this through. And members, and I think Senator Gimsey described it quite well, and this is something that's been an issue for a long time, and that's fishing tournaments throughout the state of Minnesota. I know it's a big business issue. It's something that that I know in some areas, similar to my area, is basically the same as Senator Gimsey's, with areas that are full of lakes. We have these fishing tournaments, and frankly, there's no better stewards of the water than the folks that are on these fishing tournaments and participate in those. And but this simply says it may require mandatory decontamination, and I think it's something. It's a good start, and I certainly think it's a friendly amendment, and I would ask members to vote in favor of it.
Further discussion on the A5 amendment. Seeing none, all those in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. The amendment is adopted. Further discussion, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam President. I want to commend the DNR for this aggressive measure in dealing with aquatic invasive species. I, in the past, have on occasion accused them of being a bit wimpy at going after some of these issues, but this measure, I think, is exceptionally good. And it has strong support from our Lake Minnetonka Conservation District, as well as many of the marine owners and others, because they have, in fact, volunteered to test some of this training that has is being advanced in this bill. Lake Minnetonka was the first lake in Minnesota to acquire, if you will, the Eurasian water milfoil. And that's a good many years ago, and it's been a big challenge. They have been very active through the Lake Association as well as the Conservation District and the Watershed District of attempting to keep zebra mussels out of Lake Minnetonka, and have been somewhat successful. They are the 18th state or lake in the state to be infested with the zebra mussel, but it's there. It arrived this last year. Now the challenge is, because Lake Minnetonka is one of the most heavily used recreational boating and lake, as well as for fishing tournaments, how to keep that from spreading. Because you have add the Eurasian milfoil that is in the heavy infestation, to which the zebra mussel and their larvae attach, it can easily be exported to lakes far and wide. And so our association in the Conservation District is very supportive of the means to try to halt that. And so I'm appreciative of this bill and glad to be a co-author of it, and I urge your strong support.
Further discussion, Senator Rest.
Thank you, Madam President, and thank you, Senator Ingebrigtsen, for this bill. There are a number of us who have worked on issues of aquatic invasive species, not only in Minnesota lakes, but also on the Great Lakes, where I have concentrated and focused my efforts over the past decade. And I think this is a really great step forward, because it not only has an education element into it or in the bill, but it also has an enforcement mechanism that is not just going to be limited to the conservation officers, but be seen as a responsibility and a duty of the of all peace officers. We have had, I think, from the DNR some very forward-looking policies over the years. I think one of the more recent ones, a couple of years ago, I dealt with the viral hemorrhagic septicemia, the so-called fish blood disease, and we knew that part of the solution, if there is a solution, to that kind of infestation is isolation, and as well as enforcement and education. And I think this is a wonderful bill, and I'm happy to support it.
Further discussion on Senate File 1115, Senator Saxog.
Thank you, Madam President, and thank you, Chairman Ingebrigtsen, for bringing this bill forward. I think, as you all know, this is a critical issue, not just for my district, but for the entire state. Tourism is one of the biggest industries in our land of 10,000 lakes. And we need to stop these non-native species in their tracks, bring this issue to the attention of the people of Minnesota, and get tough on those who won't respect our natural resources. As Senator Ingebrigtsen said, as soon as this goes through this body, the next body is approved by the proper committees and signed by the governor, it will, at the earliest possible time, it will go in to effect, and that'll be important for enforcement. As you know, this coming weekend is the opening of walleye fishing in Minnesota. So we would appreciate your support. Thank you.
Further discussion on Senate File 1115.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. And thank you, Senator Olson, for those comments, Senator Saxog as well, and Senator Rest. I apologize for not including you in the group that has worked an awful lot, and you have. You brought this to my attention a couple years ago because you knew I was actually on the Great Lakes Commission, and that's where I first learned of it was the ballast water that was coming in from other parts of the world. The federal government was not addressing it, and I know how that angered you, and it certainly angered me as well. And members need to know that the federal government is working on some of these things, but they're not, you know, they don't move as fast as we do in the state government. So again, I certainly thank you for all the help that you've been putting towards this over the past years. And again, members, I ask your support.
Secretary will give Senate File 1115 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1115, a bill for an act relating to natural resources, third reading.
Further discussion? Seeing none, the Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 1115. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 64 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Remaining under Senator Koch, did you have?
Madam President, remaining under motions and resolutions, I move that we take up the calendar.
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Members, we are under calendar. And might I suggest that we stay very close to our seats? There's about 9 votes.
Madam President, would it be appropriate to have a call of the Senate? Madam President, I move a call of the Senate.
Senate is under call.
Oh.
renovate the building.
Okay.
Senator Koch.
Madam President, at this time, if I could withdraw my motion to take up the calendar, I'd like to then make a motion to take up the consent calendar, and then we'll move to the calendar.
Senator Koch, you need to lift the call first.
No. Madam President, I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail, and the sergeant is instructed to bring in the absent members.
How do I do?
Without objection, Senator Koch moves that we move to the consent calendar, that we take
Thank
up
you, Madam
consent
President.
Calendar. On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. We are under consent calendar. It is printed. There is one bill on. Secretary will, excuse me, Senator Daley.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, this is a conformity bill, House File 786. And it's a conformity bill for charitable organizations reporting on salary and benefits. I'd like to thank both Senators Cohen and Weaker. This is a bipartisan bill, members. It requires the same method to be used in calculating nonprofit salary and benefits figures to the Attorney General as is required by the recently revised Form 990. It does not change what data is reported, but it collects it in a way that is more transparent to the public and to potential donors and funders. The bill was introduced with the intent to increase consistency and conformity with regards to financial data reporting requirements for nonprofits and charities. I have several letters from, for example, the Minnesota Council on Foundations in support of this, Charities Review Council, Minnesota Council of Nonprofits. As I mentioned, it's a very widely bipartisan bill, and I ask for your support, members. Thank you.
Discussion on House File 786. Seeing none, the Secretary will give House File 786 its third reading.
House File Number 786, a bill for an act relating to state government, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on House File 786. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 62 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Senator Koch.
Madam President, remaining under motions and resolutions, I move that we take up the calendar.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. We will move to the calendar. And members, please remember we have 9 votes fairly quickly in a row here, so please stay in your seats or very close to them. Secretary will give Senate File 779 its third reading.
Senate File Number 779, a bill for an act relating to state lands, third reading.
Seeing no discussion, Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 779. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 65 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Moving on to number 2 on the Senate calendar.
House file.
Secretary will give House File 186 its third reading.
House File Number 186, a bill for an act relating to driver's licenses, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on House File 186. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 65 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Moving on to the number 3 on the Senate calendar, Senate File 573. Secretary will give Senate File 573 its third reading.
Senate File Number 573, a bill for an act relating to Dakota County, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 573. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 65 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Moving to number 4 on the Senate calendar, Senate File 1130. Secretary will give Senate File 1130 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1130, a bill for an act relating to unemployment insurance, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 1130.
beer.
All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 65 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Moving to number 5 on the Senate calendar, House File 529. The secretary will give House File 529 its third reading.
House File number 529, a bill for an act relating to building codes, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on House File 529. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 63 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Moving on to number 6 on the Senate calendar, House File. House File 569. Secretary will give House File 569, third reading.
House File number 569, a bill for an act relating to labor and industry, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on House File 569. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 65 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Moving to number 7 on the Senate calendar, Senate File 712. Secretary will give Senate File 712 its third reading.
Senate File number 712, a bill for an act relating to state lands, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 712. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 65 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Moving to number 8 on the Senate calendar, Senate File 855. The secretary will give Senate File 855 its third reading.
Senate File number 855, a bill for an act relating to environment, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 855. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 64 ayes and one nay, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. We'll move to number 9 on the Senate calendar. This is our final bill, guys. Senate File 348. Secretary will give Senate File 348 its third reading.
Senate File Number 348, a bill for an act relating to human services, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 348. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 65 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Senator Colk.
Madam President, I move that the Senate do now resolve itself into a committee of the whole for the purpose of taking up the general orders calendar.
Senator Koch, we need two motions on that. Remaining under motions and resolutions, you want to move to go to general orders.
Oh, first motion, then.
On that
remaining
motion.
Under motions and, resolutions, move that we take up the general orders calendar.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Now the second.
And now I move that the Senate do now resolve itself into a committee of the whole for the purpose of taking up the general orders calendar.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. We are under general orders, Senator.
Madam President and members, I would designate the following general orders. On the general orders calendar, number 9, number 30, number 63, number 68, number 72, number 87, number 112, and number 119.
And members will take them up in that order. So we will begin with Senate File 225. Senator Peterson, it is number 9 on the general orders.
Madam President, I move that when this committee do arise, the Senate File Number 225 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam President. This is a bill that relates to some changes in the manufactured home building code. And I just have an A1 amendment I need to have distributed here.
Senator Peterson offers the A1 amendment. Secretary will report the A1 amendment.
Senator Peterson moves to amend Senate File 225 as follows. Page 4, delete sections 3 and 4 and insert. This is the A1 amendment.
To the A1 amendment, Senator Peterson.
Yep, Madam President. In sections 3 and 4 that are deleted, it's a simple change where manufactured homes are not sold in single sections anymore. It's also sold in multiple sections. So that's the technical change there. And then in section 5, we're just adding a section there relating to the municipalities that will be doing the inspections from here on out if this bill should pass. The main point of this bill is that members, and the reason why you should support it is that currently right now, manufactured home housing, they're inspected by employees of the Department of Labor and Industry. So if you can imagine a manufactured home company, for example, like Dynamic Homes in Detroit Lakes would sell a manufactured home up in Two Harbors, there's actually a Department of Labor and Industry employee that gets in the car and drives on up to Two Harbors to do the inspection. And this bill changes that. It simply gives the authority to the local municipality to do the inspection, charge their normal fees, and allows cities to do those inspections even in non-code areas within the state. There is very solid nonpartisan support for this bill. I'd like to recognize the authors and Senator Metzen, Senator Dames, and Senator Saxhog. And we'd be grateful for your support in moving this bill forward.
Further discussion to the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Further discussion on Senate File 225 as amended. Seeing none, Senator Peterson renews his motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 225 be recommended to pass. On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Moving on, we will take up House File 299, number 30 on general orders. Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move that when this committee do arise, House File 299 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, Senator Senjum.
Madam Chair and members, House File 299 is a bill called the State Agency Value Initiative. It's a small but I think important measure of government reform. What it proposes to do, Madam Chair and members, is at the end of any individual biennium, there may be in some agencies money left over. What this bill says is that if there is, agency and more specifically the employees within the agency which enable this to happen would be entitled to take up to 50% of that leftover money and apply it towards a worthy agency project. And that process involves the establishment of a peer committee within the agency. Also, whatever the project might be must be approved by the Legislative Advisory Commission and also the Minnesota Management and Budget Agency. So it does provide oversight there. Again, the intent is we often hear about agencies, it's the end of the biennium, we've got some money left, we got to spend it, and that money might be well spent willy-nilly. This is an effort to take that same money, 50% would go to a determined project within the agency and be spent for a worthwhile purpose. Of course, the other 50% would revert back to the general fund. So it's an effort to involve the employees in saving money overall for our state and also to engage them in worthwhile projects within the agency that might carry that agency forward so it can be do better work. So, Madam Chair and members, I'd ask for your support. Certainly stand for questions.
Further discussion on House File 299. Senator Wieger.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I rise to support Senate File 299. I want to thank Senator Senjum for his efforts. I believe it provides a very thoughtful approach at working in a win-win situation with labor and management, and urge your support.
Further discussion on House File 299. Senator Tomasoni.
Madam President, will Senator Senjum yield for a question?
Madam Chair, happy to yield.
Senator Senjum will yield. Senator Tomasoni.
Can you just, like, maybe you said it already and I didn't hear it, but can you give me an example of a project that one of these agencies might come up with to spend the extra money on that they didn't spend it on already during the biennium?
Senator Senjum.
Madam Chair and members, and Senator Tomasoni, I'm not sure I can visualize or identify a specific project, but again, it's an attempt to try to create an attitude, and an attitude that we don't need to spend all the money, and by the way, that if we don't, we're going to be rewarded by some self-empowering kind of vehicle here, and that's this bill that enables us to keep that money, or at least keep half of it, up to half, and apply it towards something that we've felt is important to our agency going forward. So whatever that might be, I don't work in an agency, so I'm not
I could speculate it might be for more copiers or whatever it might be, but whatever that might be, it would be determined by the employees. It would have to be approved by the Legislative Advisory Commission, and there are certainly legislative members on it, as well as MMB. So I think there's proper oversight. And again, it's something we'd frankly like to try, see if it works. Self-empowerment, I think, within any workplace, be it government or private industry, is important and something we ought to strive for. And this is one little vehicle to try to enable that to happen in a better way than it's probably doing right now.
Members, is there any further discussion? Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. Chair. So Senator Senjum will yield one more time. And does it, the way it currently works, if there's money left over at the end of the biennium, does it go back to the general fund?
Madam Chair.
Senator Senjum.
Senator Tomasoni. Now, Mr. Chair. Up to 50%, or 50% would go back, certainly, to the general fund. Up to 50%. It doesn't have to be 50%. There's a possibility it could be retained by the agency.
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chair, Senator Senjum maybe misunderstood my question. Currently, before this, if this legislation does not become law, all of the money would go back to the general fund, correct? Any money left over at the end of the biennium?
Senator Senjum.
Mr. Chair and Senator Tomasoni, yes, all it would go back. I think the history has taught us most of it doesn't, because it gets spent in the fury at the end. You know, we've got to spend our budget, because if we don't, we're going to get cut next year.
Are there any other discussion, members? Seeing none, Senator Senjum renews his motion. All those in favor, say aye. All those opposed, say aye. Motion prevails. Next, we have Senate File 249, Senator Cruz.
Mr. Chair, I move when this committee do arise, Senate File 249 be recommended to pass.
Senator Cruz moves that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 249 be recommended to pass. Senator Cruz?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. Senate File 249 is a bill concerning residential contractors and insurance claims. Essentially, the easiest way to explain this bill is often here in Minnesota, we have hailstorms or severe weather. There is a tendency that when these storms happen, you'll get those folks that knock on your door and say, hey, we'll pay for your deductible to put a new roof on, or pay for your deductible to put some new siding on. This bill is to kind of constrain that. The reason we want to do that is because many times these contractors will wrap the cost of that deductible back in and send it to the insurance company. The result of that is going to be increased insurance premiums, increased insurance deductibles. We definitely want to make sure that we keep that curbed. When you're talking about homeowners insurance, for a lot of folks, especially if you have a mortgage, that's not an option. The bank is going to require you to have that on there, and we've seen those insurance rates increase to the tune of 50% over the past 5 years. This is also a good business bill for the reason that many of these companies and contractors will come in from out of state to take advantage of these storms, and what that does is that puts undue burden on the businesses here in Minnesota. Some of these contractors, not all, but some, tend to do not as high quality work as our folks here in Minnesota do, so we definitely want to make sure that we support them and take that incentive away. It has some broad support from the Insurance Federation of Minnesota, the Professional Insurance Agents of Minnesota, the Minnesota Independent Insurance Adjusters, Minnesota Association of Exterior Contractors, the Builders Association of Minnesota, and also the Department of Labor and Industry. So I would appreciate a yes vote.
Members, is there any discussion? Seeing none, Senator Cruz renews his motion that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 249 be recommended to pass. All those in favor, say aye. Any opposed, say no. Motion prevails. Next we have Senate File 994. Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when the committee do arise, Senate File 994 be recommended to pass.
Senator Senjum has moved that Senate File 994, when this committee do arise, that Senate File 994 be recommended to pass. Senator Senjum, on your motion.
Mr. Chair, to Senate File 994, I have an A11 amendment. It's basically a housekeeping amendment which says the section is effective the day following enactment. So that's the essence of the amendment.
Senator Senjum offers the A11 amendment. Secretary shall report the A11 amendment. Senator Senjum, can you confirm the number on the amendment?
Yes, certainly, Mr. Chair. It is 0448. 0448.
Thank you, Senator Senjum. We're trying to find it at the desk. Senator Senjum, there seems to be a paperwork problem. Would you like to progress the bill when we come back to it? Oh, I'm sorry, Senator Senjum. Before that, apparently there are other amendments that maybe we could get to before this. Would you like to withdraw your motion, Senator Senjum?
Mr. Chair, I was just told that whatever she's going to be doing is going to take 5 minutes or so. Why don't I just progress the bill? We can move on and come back.
Okay. Progress has been requested. Progress is granted. We will now move on to the next bill, Senate File 1162. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1162 be recommended to pass.
Senator Ingebrigtsen has moved that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1162 be recommended to pass. Senator Ingebrigtsen on that motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, Senate File 1162 is a technical clarification bill, if you will. Last year, in 2010, Minnesota Laws Chapter 315 made a number of non-controversial changes to the landlord-tenant laws. What this bill does is clarifies the definition of a residential tenant in Minnesota state statutes while preserving the protections that the section of law provides to tenants living in residential properties going through foreclosure. This was intended in the 2010 law, but it was left a bit ambiguous. So I would ask your support for this technical amendment.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I rise in support of Senator Ingebrigtsen's bill. This is just a technical clarification. When we passed the Tenants' Bill of Rights last year, this is one of those unintended consequences. It wasn't clear that in the language of the bill that we were specifically talking about residential tenants, folks who are renting for purposes of living in their home and not commercial tenants, and so this is providing that clarification.
Members, is there any other discussion on the motion? Senator Ingebrigtsen renews his motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1162 be recommended to pass. No further. There being no further discussion, all those in favor of Senator Ingebrigtsen's motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say no. Motion prevails. Senator Senjum, I understand that your amendment is at the desk. Would you like to take up your motion on Senate File 994?
Mr. Chair, I certainly would if we're able to go now.
Okay. Senator Senjum renews his motion on Senate File 994.
Mr. Chair, I would have the A52 amendment, which, we'll report it.
Give me a blank. Senator Senjum offers the A52 amendment. The Secretary shall report the A52 amendment.
Senator Senjum moves to amend Senate File 994 as follows. Page 2, after line 26, insert. This is the A52 amendment.
Senator Senjum, would you like to explain this extraordinarily complicated amendment to us, please?
Mr. Chair, this amendment simply makes this section effective the day following enactment.
Members, is there any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the amendment, of the motion, please say aye. Any opposed, say no. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Senator Senjum, on your motion. Senator Dibble, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I offer the A50 amendment, A50.
Senator Dibble offers the A50 amendment. The Secretary shall report the amendment.
Senator Dibble moves to amend House Senate File 994 as follows. Page 2 after line 26, insert. This is the A50 amendment.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The A50 amendment asks that the State of Minnesota, the Commissioner of Human Services, conduct and coordinate a statewide study on the social and economic costs of gambling in Minnesota and work with folks who have an expertise in a variety of arenas, but specifically not work with those folks who have a financial interest in gambling. Mr. Chair and members, we have a lot of research that's been handed to us over the last few weeks as gambling ideas have really started to gain momentum around here. But all that research that I've seen really does consist of industry-sponsored research that really talks about all the taxes, all the jobs, et cetera. And there's, you know, some pretty strong indication from academic sources that there are a number of costs. We have to really compute an overall comprehensive cost and benefit analysis of gambling in Minnesota. You know, there's some indication based on work done by an economist out of Illinois that up to half the costs, you know, equivalent to half the cost of the drug addiction problem we have in our country is the kind of cost that we experience from gambling, with increased crime, lost work time, bankruptcies, financial hardships, etc. It has been said that it's comparable to the value of the lost output of an additional recession in the economy every 4 years. So we need to get a handle of that. All the research I've seen is of this variety is national or is other states, is a little bit aged, and so we need to get a sense of what are the costs, what are the benefits. All the gambling proposals I've seen draw from a statewide audience or a very localized class of customers, not like a Nevada or an Atlantic City that serves a large, huge national tourist industry. It's folks from within our own state, and we have to deal with the crime, personal bankruptcy, domestic violence, lost work days, child abuse, other social costs. Mr. Chair and members, you know, most folks don't gamble. About a third of the folks don't gamble. Most others only gamble occasionally. That's true for myself. 80% of the wages in casino enterprises and in gambling across the board, whether it's charitable or not, comes from only 10% of the population. So imagine the impact on the subset of lives that we're talking about when it's a subset of that 10%. It's significant and it's extraordinary. And so this simply asks that we really have that information, that's well in hand as we move forward on you know, moving down this path, moving in this direction in our state.
Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would, I'm not altogether sure whether or not this information is not already available. I see, Mr. Chair, and maybe I can just refer this to Senator Dibble, there's $250,000 to be appropriated for this. Now, my particular bill had to do with the charitable bingo halls, which do good work for charitable things and communities. My hope is that that money would not come out of anything that they would otherwise do. They're a struggling group, and I would hope that if we're going to spend this, it would not affect that group of facilities.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
I'd like to request a roll call vote on this amendment.
Senator Dibble has requested a roll call.
And to Senator Senjum's question, no, this comes from the lottery prize proceeds, so it doesn't affect anything related to charitable gambling or bingo halls or revenues that are generated there.
Senator Senjum?
Mr. President, or Madam President, pardon me, Mr. Chair, I'm just going to let everybody kind of vote their conscience on this one. I have no strong feelings on it. I'm going to vote no, but have at it.
Senator Perry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would Senator Dibble yield?
Senator Dibble will yield. Senator Perry.
Thank you. My question is this not duplicative? Are we not already doing this through the Minnesota State Lottery system? I thought we appropriated funds to work with problem gambling and to research and study. I could be wrong, but if you could answer that, thanks.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you. Great question. Senator Perry, appreciate that. And I've looked at that question, and absolutely some money is devoted to working with problem gamblers. But we've not done the comprehensive analysis that's objective, that's fact-based, that's not industry-generated. Looking really at, as a matter of policy, the costs and benefits that gambling really has in Minnesota. And it's particularly important to really have some good facts and some figures in hand and in mind as we seem to be moving down this path. Of looking at gambling. And to be clear, members, this isn't about new state-sponsored casinos or racinos or, pull tabs in bars or video slots in bars. It's about Native American casinos. It's about all the full continuum of gambling that we have in the state of Minnesota. It's not focused or targeted on any one sector. It's really understanding what are the costs, what are the benefits. There's a lot of talk about a lot of taxes that are generated, a lot of jobs that are generated, but there are real costs, both in direct expenditures that we make in public safety, public services of those sort, as well as the opportunity costs when people are expending their families' proceeds, they're losing their jobs, etc.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Dibble, this may be a good idea, but I don't know if it's a good idea to add as an amendment on the floor. I'm wondering if perhaps there was a bill introduced that could have gone through some of the finance divisions. It appropriates $250,000 from the lottery prize fund. I don't know how much money is in the lottery prize fund. I don't know if it's an appropriate amount, if it's an amount that they can do without what they otherwise use the funding for. I just think it's inappropriate to bring this as an amendment on the floor, Mr. Chair. And I also did a quick Google of social and economic costs of gambling, and there are 80 pages worth of studies pretty much listed there, lots of information. I know Senator Hahn recently had an informational hearing on this very same issue, brought in specialists from probably the state and around the country. And I just don't know if this is necessary, and I don't think it's appropriate to put it on as an amendment on the floor without a hearing.
Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't often disagree with amendments offered by Senator Dibble, but I reluctantly will disagree with putting this one on the bill, somewhat for the reasons that Senator Roebling mentioned, but we already know the social and economic costs of gambling. That's why, in part, a number of us oppose any kind of expansion of gambling. The bill before us, however, is really speaking to the economics of some charitable lawful gambling organizations that, because of this recession, are having a hard time keeping afloat And so the bill is proposing a really small change, and it might even be temporary once this great recession is over. And I think that even though I do think it's germane, I am concerned that it really broadens the scope of the bill. And although we do not permit bridge amendments in the Minnesota Senate, I would have some concern that it might be an incentive to attempt a bridge amendment.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I believe that there may be a germaneness question on this amendment. The bill itself is limited to a very narrow area of gambling, charitable gambling, and specifically bingo. Senator Dibble's amendment goes quite a ways beyond that narrow field, and pulling in the social and economic costs of gambling as subject to address, as well as authorizing studies and reports and a cost of $250,000. I just believe that it's going in the wrong direction and considerably a different scope of where the bill is going as well.
Senator Limmer, was that rhetorical, or are you questioning germaneness?
I'm asking for a germaneness ruling from you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer has asked for a ruling on germaneness advice. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What this amendment does is simply ask for a study to look at the social costs of gambling. It's attached to a bill that some argue constitutes not a great, but you know it allows more revenue generated through charitable gambling operations to be retained by those operations, arguably so that they conduct their business more effectively, and as such represents an expansion of gambling in that regard. And this study has to do with all forms of gambling, charitable, casinos, you name it, like I described earlier. And it's simply a study. So it, of course, asks us to take a look at a set of facts and draw some policy conclusions. So it does no harm to the intent of Senator Senjum's bill. It's no expansion to what Senator Senjum is trying to do. It simply says that we take a look at what the effects are if we're going to be expanding gambling or just having gambling in Minnesota.
Is there additional advice? Okay, give me just a second. We'll take a look at this.
Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Additional advice. Mr. Chair, if you look at the original bill, I it's not a very large bill. It's only 2.25 pages long. And the bill that Senator Senjum has, actually the new language doesn't even consist of 2 full sentences. But if you look at Senator Dibble's amendment, I think just the scope of it in its simple analysis is quite a bit larger. It's 2 pages of full language. It's considerably different and much more, very much larger in scope and a completely different purpose than what Senator Senjum's bill is before us.
Is there any further advice? Well, the chair would rule that the amendment is germane, the two-prong test being that it doesn't substantially alter the intent of the bill. I don't think the length of the amendment necessarily is a factor, but I think it is germane to the subject at hand. Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would Senator Dibble yield?
Senator Dibble will yield. Senator Roebling?
Senator Dibble, has there been a bill introduced related to this issue?
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Roebling, thank you for giving me the opportunity to respond to that inquiry earlier. Yes, there has been, and I completely agree with you. It would be desirable to have hearings on bills. I've received one hearing on one bill so far this year, and that bill was tabled by the chair, even though the committee was ready and able to vote, and they were going to vote in the affirmative and vote that bill out. So, yeah, sure, it's great to have hearings on bills, but this is my opportunity to present an idea to this body and have some discussion and consideration of it. So that's why you're seeing this language in front of you right now.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dibble, how much money is in the lottery prize fund, and what impact would this have on it?
Senator Roebling, are you asking Senator Dibble to yield?
Yes. Yeah. Sorry, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble will yield.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure, Senator Roebling. Millions and millions and millions of dollars, and so it would have very little impact on the lottery prize fund.
Senator Roebling.
Mr. Chair, and that is my point. We're not sure. We're not sure what impact this would have on the lottery prize fund. I'm not even sure what other purposes that fund may be used for, besides paying prizes, of course. And so I just think it's really inappropriate, and I would ask members to please oppose the amendment, because we do not know what impact this would have on that fund, whether or not it's truly needed to have another study. I know there's been many, many studies done in the past, and I just think that we need to have more discussion on this before we approve a study of that magnitude.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, there are not many things that Senator Dibble and I agree on, but this is one that we do. And I'm not going to support this amendment right now, mostly because of timing. But certainly we need a conversation and more discussion about the negative effects of gambling in our state. And so my commitment to Senator Dibble is that we work on this towards next session.
Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, to Senator Roebling and Senator Gazelka. If we go through the committee route, we'll never have a discussion about this, and we'll never find these things out because, of course, bills of certain members of a certain party are bottled up and disregarded. So this is our opportunity to have this discussion and to step up and see how we feel about finding out this information. Sure, there may be 80 studies that you can find on Google, but none of those studies are relevant to the question that's posed in this proposal. None of them are specific to Minnesota. None of them are objective, fact-based. None of them are current. And we need to have this information in hand if we're going to make a rational decision about gambling in Minnesota.
Senator Senjum.
Mr. Chair, I would like to tag on to some of the comments I've heard from Senator Roebling, Senator Perry, who apparently has left, but I'm not so sure there's not a fair amount of this going on already through the Minnesota Lottery. I know there's a budget. I know they've got a lottery to run, but I would dare say and perhaps wonder whether or not they don't also look at some of these issues. I just think at this point in time it's premature. If this is a good idea, it ought to go through a hearing. We ought to be able to hear from the lottery in terms of what they're doing and how they're doing it and what their findings are. It just seems to me to willy-nilly spend $250,000 at this point without that information is not wise.
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, the lottery, part of its mission and in charge is to promote gambling and promote lottery customers in Minnesota. They absolutely don't do an objective and fair analysis on the costs and benefits of gambling in Minnesota. They have a stake in the game, so to speak. Pardon the bad pun. But, you know, they are promoting and you know, trying to create new ways of folks to become attracted and interested and generate more money from gambling, from Minnesotans. That's what the lottery does. So they're absolutely not the, you know, the fox that's going to guard this hen house. And likewise, the Gambling Control Board, all I hear from them are studies that are quickly undermined. Their economic analysis is deeply, deeply flawed. They themselves, as the Gambling Control Board members have come to promote their appointments to the Gambling Control Board, talk about how they want to promote gambling and work with all the gambling interests and create more possibilities and more ways of folks to do gambling in Minnesota. We need someone who has an objective perspective, a professional, and a group of professionals who don't have a stake in the game, who aren't vested, whose jobs don't really revolve around the success or failure of gambling in Minnesota, to give us the facts so we can make a rational and fair choice on this policy direction that we're going down in this state.
All right, I have Senators Howe, Hoffman, and Perry in that order. Senator Howe.
Mr. Chair, would Senator Dibble yield for a question?
Senator Dibble will yield. Senator Howe.
Mr. Chair, to Senator Sinjim's point, we have $250,000 sounds like a lot of money, and I apologize if I missed it earlier, but I was wondering if Senator Dibble could help us grasp how much gross revenue gambling happens in our state of Minnesota currently.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, my good friend who is opposing this amendment but has good information, and she can illuminate us a little bit.
Senator Rest, to Senator Howe's question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to Senator Howe and the members. If you pull up the Minnesota Lottery's website, there is a section called Revenue Distribution, and during FY 2010, the lottery paid out more than $305 million in prizes to the holders of winning tickets, and it would be those dollars that Senator Dibble's amendment is addressed. They're also in that he could have made it part of the unclaimed prize money. But that would go to the state's general fund, and the unclaimed prize money is $9.2 million. There also is a retailer commission. As you're probably aware, you get a report periodically from the lottery about how many retailers have benefited from the commission that they receive. And during the fiscal year ending June 30th, 2010, retailers earned $30 million. The general fund gets, in 2010, or FY10, the lottery contributed $67.4 million to the general fund. And then, of course, when we passed the amendment establishing the lottery, part of its attractiveness, I think, or traction, was once again dealing with the environment and establishing the Environment Natural Resources Trust Fund, which receives 40% of the lottery net proceeds. And for fiscal year 2010, the legislature appropriated $26 million to 48 projects based on recommendations by the LCCMR. So the prize money that Senator Dibble's amendment speaks to amounts to $250,000 out of $305 million.
Follow-up, Senator Hoff, or excuse me, Senator Howe.
Madam President, I appreciate the Senator's answer. However, I was looking for a more comprehensive answer, taking in local, I think you just answered the state portion of it. I was also looking for the Indian gaming part of it too, and I wasn't looking at just, I was talking about the gross money spent on gambling in our state.
Follow up to that, Senator Rest.
Yes. Madam Chair, the of course the tribal gaming information is proprietary. But the Minnesota has been, with regard to charitable gambling, and you've just gotten the lottery dollars, the charitable gambling has been in the billions when it was the most popular. However, and again, one of the reasons for Senator Senjum's bill is things are changing. And the recession has cut the revenues from, as far as I can remember, the most recent report from the Charitable Gambling Board has cut, that's been cut in half. And although Minnesota remains one of the biggest gambling states in the country, its charitable gambling revenues have gone way down, and I believe are less than $1 billion, far less than $1 billion now.
To that point, Senator Dibble?
I think Senator Howe asks an excellent question, and if we pass this amendment, we'll get a more definitive answer to it.
Continuing discussion on Senate File 994, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Dibble, I would love to support this amendment because I share some of your same concerns. I want to reiterate what Senator Gazelka had to say. I was at the presentation that Professor Grinnell's put before the HHS committee, and he had some compelling evidence why gambling, the cost-benefit to the state, may not be what we all think it is. The costs far outweigh the benefits. So I would like to vow to work with Senator Dibble on this also. I have made no secret of my opposition to any expanding of gambling in the state of Minnesota. In fact, I believe I'm a co-author on a bill that would take away the Category 3 gambling because I do believe it's detrimental to our state. So I would just like to reassure Senator Dibble that many of us agree on this issue.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, and I appreciate the vows and the assurances of working with me. I've gotten a lot of those this year on bills that are going to be heard in committee that haven't yet been heard. That's our opportunity to vow and to work on things together, and it just doesn't seem to actually happen. So, members, this amendment is in front of you. Your opportunity to take a look at this question is right now.
Further discussion on the A50 amendment. Senator Perry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I hear a lot of support, but I know that my colleague, Senator Dibble, would not like to have anyone accusing him of not going through the committee process. So, Senator Dibble, get your bill put together, drop it, request a hearing in my committee, which I don't believe you have. So if you want a bill heard, unlike some of the requests that were moot last year, I'm willing to hear your bill. Drop it, get it ready, and I'll hear it.
Further discussion on the A50 amendment. Senator Rest, I do have you on the list, but I didn't know if you... All right. Further discussion on the A50 amendment. Seeing none, I believe a roll call has been requested. The Secretary will take the roll on the A50 amendment. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 29 ayes and 36 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Further discussion on Senate File 994. Further discussion on Senate File 994. Seeing none, Senator Senjum renews his motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 994 be recommended to pass. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Remaining under general orders, number 87, Senate File 1044, Senator Perry.
Madam Chair, I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1044 be recommended to pass.
To that motion, Senator Perry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, this bill is what I would like to call the disaster relief bill. And during the preparation for the 2010 second special session that we had, we found that there were needs of communities that had been identified that had that were not adequately addressed under Chapter 12A. So it was determined at that time that we would start working together and put forth a joint state agency initiative, which was coordinated by the Department of Public Safety, Division of Homeland Security, and Emergency Management. I'm just going to briefly run down a couple of things here so that you understand what was done within the bill. If you were to taking a look at Section 12A.05, the Board of Water and Soil Resources, we had many legislators voice a concern that the Reinvest in Minnesota program is not an appropriate vehicle for disaster recovery, and that, in fact, it is a mitigation strategy. So changes were made in an attempt to make clearer the use of disaster funds appropriated to RIM. The erosion and sediment section was also changed to make it clearer that funds appropriated meant to be for disaster recovery. And a final change to that section was to ensure grants in the disaster area could be extended. We worked with education. The Department of Education changed the language to be consistent with how they determine enrollment aid. We also worked with employment and economic development. We had legislators voice their concern over the management of grants from the Minnesota Investment Fund for those businesses that were impacted by a disaster. This change would limit the availability of funds funded from Chapter 12A to those businesses with actual physical loss. In addition, the loan forgiveness schedule was adjusted to be consistent with current policy. Housing finance, we took a look at that. The change was simply a technical word change to make it consistent with their administrative rule. Human services, the Department of Health and Department of Human Services coordinated on a new subdivision to address waiving timeliness of payments due from nursing homes in the disaster area. And that came about with some issues that we had down in New Richland, Minnesota. Natural resources. A little bit of a contention, but we addressed what was called substantially damaged. It has a federal definition which restricts the use of funds for buyouts. In addition, there were several instances of flood warning gauges being damaged by the flood. Now, this will allow the DNR to use an appropriation under this chapter to pay for the repair and will not wait until funds would be available in the DNR's biennial appropriation. A new subdivision was added to allow state funds to be available for removal and repair of publicly owned dams. This was a need during the fall floods and added to in the special session bill. We worked with public safety. A subdivision was added to allow state general fund appropriations to be used to pay for the coordination of long-term recovery activities. By providing funds for the coordination of resources for long-term recovery, those communities and families can get back to normal as quickly as possible without gaps in assistance. We also worked with transportation. Several technical word changes were made to align the title of subdivision with MnDOT programs. MnDOT has established an emergency relief account. A new subdivision was added to this chapter to allow for the use of those funds in the disaster area. The local road and bridge subdivision was amended to allow for the appropriation to cover demolition and design cost for road projects. It was discovered that back in 2007, demolition and design was not included in the special session bill, and counties did not undertake the project because, of course, they did not have the money for the demolition and design. As a result, MnDOT had approximately $5 million of unspent money. MnDOT also amended the same section to allow for reasonable costs to mitigate damage from future disasters to break the damage repair cycle. So, members, in conclusion, the revisions to Chapter 12 are supported by state agencies to fill identified gaps in the current law. And I must commend all the agencies because they worked long and hard to make sure that we did the revision to Chapter 12 to make it beneficial for our communities and citizens. So I would ask for support on this bill.
Further discussion on Senate File 1044. Seeing none, Senator Perry renews his motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1044 be recommended to pass. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Moving on, we have Senate File 143. It is number 112 on general orders. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1243 be recommended to pass.
I'm sorry, I guess I had said the wrong number, so yes, 1243. Senator Ingebrigtsen to that motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, Senate File 1243 is a Waste Management Act modification. Pollution Control Agency brought this to me and wanted me to bring this forward. And the bill is for an act relating to an updating the types of materials that are recyclable and assuring those materials are delivered to the proper processing. And adding the source-separated compost materials to the definition of recyclable materials. That's all it does, members. It's something that is not mandated, but this can include food, non-recyclable paper separated by the generator for collection. This law will also allow increased collection of organic materials for composting, but is not mandated. This change will produce opportunities for growth in the private and public sector. Compost sites will benefit from this additional material. In the metro area alone, approximately 225,000 tons per year of organic material are disposed at municipal waste sites. Members, I ask for your support for this technical bill.
Further discussion on Senate File 1243. Seeing none, Senator Ingebrigtsen renews his motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1243 be recommended to pass. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Moving on, we have Senate File 1078, number 119 on general orders. Senator Cruz.
Madam Chair, I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1078 be recommended to pass.
To that motion, Senator Cruz.
Madam Chair, members, Senate File 1078 is a bill that would allow an alternative financing and investment pilot transportation project with the Department of Transportation. Essentially, what this would allow is the Commissioner of Transportation to enter into an agreement with governmental or non-governmental agencies, nonprofits, private investors, for the purpose of potentially speeding up the completion of a project There is no specific project picked yet for this, but the hopes from the department is that we would be able to pick a project that would allow for some economic development if quickly completed, find some private investors that would be willing to put some money into that to forward that project on. The commissioner would then be required to report back to both the majority and minority in the House and the Senate on all the terms of the project, and the project would be required and constrained by all of the current STIP plans and financing agreements that we are under.
Further discussion on Senate File 1078. Seeing none, Senator Cruz renews his motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1078 be recommended to pass. On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Koch.
Madam Chair, I move that the committee do now arise and report.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Koch.
I move that the report of the committee of the whole as kept by the secretary be now adopted.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Koch.
Madam President, I move for a brief recess for the purpose of appointing conference committees.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. We are in a brief recess. Senate will come to order. Senator Koch.
Madam President, is there a report at the desk?
Yes, there is, Senator Koch. Secretary will read the report.
Senator Koch from the committee, Subcommittee on Conference Committees recommends that the following senators be, and they hereby are appointed as the Conference Committee on Senate File 170, Senators Daley, DeKreif, Wieger. On Senate File 509, Senators Limmer, Newman, Vandeveer, Gazelka, and Chamberlain. Senator Koch moves that the foregoing appointments be approved.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail.
Madam President, remaining under motions and resolutions, I move that we take up the fifth order of business, revert to the fifth order of business, motions and resolutions, or
without
committee
objection.
Reports.
Without objection, we will revert to the fifth order of business, reports of committees. Secretary will read the reports.
Senator Roebling from the Committee on Finance, to which was referred Senate File 1244, a bill for an act relating to environment, moves that so when so amended, the bill do pass. Amendments were adopted and the report is adopted.
Madam President.
Senator Koch.
I move that the committee report as read by the Secretary be adopted.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion is adopted. Second reading of Senate bills, sixth order of business, excuse me, move to the sixth order of business, the second reading of Senate bills, Senate File 1244, second reading. We will now move to the 13th order of business, announcements of Senate interest. Without objection, the following members will be excused from today's session: Senator Scheid and Senator Metzen all day, Senator Pappas from 10:30 to 10:45 a.m., Senator Daley from 10:30 to 11:05 a.m., and Senator Jungbauer from 12:20 to 12:35. Without objection, they are excused. Further announcements of Senate interest, Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Madam President. For members of the Subcommittee on Redistricting, we'll meet at 2:32, half an hour after a session here in room 112.
Further announcements? Senator Koch.
Madam President, I move that we adjourn until tomorrow, May 11th at 10:30 a.m.
Senator Koch has moved. We adjourn until Wednesday, May 11th at 10:30 a.m. All in favor, say aye. Those opposed, no. We are adjourned.